So welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian, show 56, Insight 56. We've all got new microphones now, so we should be coming over loud and clear. Are you there, Rafe?
I am, Steve. Hello, everybody.
And is Ewan there in Scotland?
I am, yes, and I'm going to be on my best behaviour.
Excellent.
We've told Ewan off for putting random bits of music onto the soundtrack. We haven't got a performing rights licence, Ewan, and we'll get charged and fined and sued.
Well, we actually need an MCPS license, not a PRS license.
Well, let's not go down that route either. Almost some news, very briefly. The N79 Eco and N79 Active have been launched. It's all getting rather N79 confusing. Rafe, do you want to just summarise the two new models?
Yes, these are two new variants of the N79. One that's announced this week by Nokia and one that's appeared in the Nokia UK online shop. The N79 Active, it's basically your standard N79, but it comes with a Bluetooth heart monitor. It's basically you strap it around your chest and it measures your heartbeat and sends it via Bluetooth to the phone. And on the phone, there's a customized version of Sports Tracker. Should be available to everybody in due course. And that basically, as well as recording your GPS position and your footsteps as the standard Sports Tracker does, will now also record your heartbeat. And of course, it can do calculations about how much energy you're using and fitness and all sort of things like that. So it's sort of a N79 with a, you know, active or sports theme, sort of just, you know, an extra thing to include in the box. And personally, I sort of think this sort of thing's a great idea. And I only hope that the Bluetooth heart monitor will be available as a separate item, because, of course, it would work with any Bluetooth phone as long as you put the custom version of Sports Tracker on it. The N79 Eco, by contrast, is the environmentally friendly version of the N79. And this is really a concept that Nokia are testing as part of their Power of We strategy, their kind of environmental strategy, just playing around with new concepts. And what they've done here is it's a standard N79, but they've left the charger out of the box and they've also put it in a smaller box. Now, this may not seem like very much, but of course, you know, charges and boxes, when you add them up to the scale of Nokia, do have a very serious environmental impact, and anything small you can do can have a big impact. I think leaving out the charge is an interesting one, certainly for someone like us, you know, who almost certainly bought a Nokia phone before. It's, you know, a pretty viable solution, actually, because how many Nokia charges do you need? I know I've got, you know, probably 5 or 10 Nokia around the house here, and honestly, I probably don't need an extra one, and I think you could extend that to cables, manuals, DVDs as well. I'd be interested to hear your opinion, Ewan. Would you buy a Nokia phone without a power cable in it?
Probably, yes. Mainly because I've got so many of them lying around. But when I go traveling, I tend to use things like the MP3 players and the PSPs all charge over USB. And now Nokia, and although the N79 doesn't do that yet, Nokia are now starting to have phones that do charge over USB. I think while we're not going to see the death of the mains charger, I do think that it's a viable alternative around us and we should be using them. So I'd be more than happy to not buy without a charger. And to be honest, the amount of PR phones that we get at All About Symbian that are just the phone, it's something that I'm actually pretty used to already.
Yeah, and how about you, Steve?
I have to say, I think it's a great idea, but it's not taken far enough. And the whole concept of making a phone eco-friendly in terms of its packaging, you'd have thought, well, we've got the full phone with all accessories, all the manual cables. Let's do a phone with just the phone and its battery. Call that the eco version, because the problem is that most phones and smartphones do get recycled to family members and friends, and they're not going to want just the bare unit. They actually want the bits with it because it might be their first phone. So you're then left without any cables or chargers. So a lot of the time you do actually need all the bits or most of the bits with each phone, but there will be situations like, for example, Ewan and Rafe who have umpteen phones and they're simply getting a new one and hanging onto the old model for compatibility reasons, sentimental value, or just because they like collecting phones in Rafe's case, in which case they have to have both options, the full, what, the version with everything in the box and the version with almost nothing in the box. It's a halfway house. Just leaving one thing out, it seems a bit half-hearted.
I could be cynical here, but one way to increase a company's profit is to sell things at a higher price, or sell them at the same price with less stuff in the box. Yes, it's green. Yes, it's eco. But yes, it's going to reduce the bill of materials down on this phone as well. And if this experiment works, the cynic in me thinks we might see more green phones, but not for environmental reasons.
I think that's interesting. It does bring up a good point. I think to be truly successful, there is going to have to be some kind of cost difference. But I agree with Steve. I'd be happy getting a phone and just, you know, as long as it was in sort of a tamper-proof case, be that some kind of blister plastic, I don't know what would be most environmentally friendly, that would be fine by me. However, I'd also add a caveat that it would be nice to see in the sort of the boxing some kind of code that enabled you to buy various bits of accessories, now be that cable or charger or whatever, for a reduced price, because at the moment there's obviously a big profit margin on accessories. So for people who do take the environmentally friendly option and then decide they do need something later on, I think they should be rewarded for doing so, and that's both in cost terms and maybe if they do want to buy one or two accessories. And again, you know, you could package those in an environmentally friendly way, just put them in a plastic bag, you know, biodegradable with a bit of cardboard along the top, rather than putting it in all the packaging it usually comes with.
Yeah, I think that until the sort of eco packages start actually becoming cheaper for people, once there's actually an impact on people's pocket and people's wallets, I don't think they're really going to take off. We all love to be greener, but unless there's actually some kind of cost saving passed on to the user, so for example Nokia saves 30 quid on a package and passes 20 quid of that on to the buyer, then that concept's going somewhere. At the moment it's simply a bit of a gesture, I have to say. Moving on to the next topic of news, the Nokia E63 has been in the house, well, Rafe's house, for about a month now. It's been in my house for a week or so. And as you see, there's a review coming up on the site in two parts. Just to give you my podcast impressions, I have to say it's a very solid device. There are no creaks. It's kind of a all plastic version of the Nokia E71 with a few features removed. The main point, the number one unique selling point, is actually the price. The E71 currently sells for something like £300-310. Today, the Expansys have actually got an offer the day we're recording this that's selling the E63 for £180. And I don't think that's going to be atypical. So to get an S60 QWERTY smartphone with Wi-Fi, S60 third edition feature pack 1, 3.5mm jack, 2-megapixel camera, and quite a few of the usual accoutrements, all for £180, SIM-free, unlocked, do with as you want. I think that's pretty impressive. Just even though the power adopters may not go for it, it's impressive value. Rafe, what are your impressions of the E63?
I mean, I completely agree with you on the value thing, Steve. You know, it is missing a GPS, which is a shame. But I think for the typical user of this device, you know, if they do want a GPS, they're going to be the sort of person that's getting the E71. And, you know, you have to cut costs somewhere, and I suspect actually rather than cutting costs, some of that's about product differentiation with the E71. The other change is, you know, it's not a 3.5G. Again, it's not ideal, but it has got Wi-Fi, and I think in the sort of corporate setting or the messaging setting, I don't think that's too big a deal. The keyboards, I actually think, is better than the E71. It's been redesigned slightly. It's got an extra two keys on the bottom row, which just means you're less cramped because you haven't got the control and character key on the same thing, which makes it easier to use. Nice feature is that it's got a flashlight on it. If you hold down the space bar while you're in the idle screen, the camera flash turns on. I don't see why we don't get that in every single Nokia phone with a flash. So the E60 really appeals, and I actually think, you know, there's a certain market for it in companies looking for sort of cheap QWERTY devices, and honestly there is nothing on the market to match it, and it's really a good sign of how Nokia applies its economies of scale and the sort of relatively lean resources that the Symbian OS requires to create quite cheap smartphones. And you should think of the other QWERTY devices out there, there isn't anything really that competes with it in terms of specifications. The nearest you get is something like the Palm Centro for, again, around the £200 price mark. But of course, that's a much more basic feature set. So a big thumb up from me. I mean, the other thing that's been interesting, some of the commenters have picked up on this on the site, I also think it has a certain amount of appeal for consumer users, those looking for, you know, an email device or a messaging device. You know, it's not for everybody, not for power users, as you suggested, but the kind of the blue and the red finish on it actually make it look quite attractive. And I would say, arguably, in some ways, it's more attractive than the E71 and sort of, I don't know, it's just a nice feel in the hand. And, you know, I think it's great to see, you know, a device at this kind of price and still be attractive and, you know, have a lot of stuff going for it.
Yeah, I have to say the finish and the feel of it is just quite important. The E71 feels great in the hand because it's metal, and regular listeners will know I love metal. But this is kind of matte and rubberized plastic. If you think back to the old the Scion S3MX, so there's our Scion reference for this week. But that came out with a rubberized back, and everyone raved about it. Now, in the Scion's case, it all rubbed off and it all went pear-shaped. I have more trust in Nokia's build quality. But the E63, it just feels impossible to drop. Most phones, you pick them up, I better not drop this. I think the E63, you can safely say, I'm never going to drop this because it's so grippy. It just grips, it clings to your hand. Ewan, have you seen the E63?
I've not seen it, but I do want to make 2 points. The first one was on the price. It reminds me very much of the original N-Gage Classic, which quite a few people poo-pooed as the game machines, but was always seen as a very cheap way to have all of the power of the Symbian S60. In those days, it was comparable to the 7650 and 3650 in many cases was regarded as the better phone from those initial batches. So there is precedent that the lowest value S60 phone is actually one of the better ones. On a point of fact, the Sion 3C had the original rubber coating, not the 3MX.
Yawn.
It was removed from the 3MX, and the 3C's 1 megabyte one was fine, but the 2 megabyte one had a different European regulation on it, and that was the one that flaked.
There you are. Ewan is a bigger Sion geek than me, and proud to admit it.
I just repaired more of them than you.
It was a long time ago. Okay, let's move on.
Far, far away. Cold
Yes.
I'm going to be on my behaviour this one, haven't I?
Yeah. And when I say move on quickly, I mean quickly. We're now going to just a brief news item on the changes to the QT licensing. Now, Rafe is the only guy on this podcast, I suspect, who can talk on this. And Rafe, can we please keep it under about 2 or 3 minutes?
I'll do my best, Steve. So basically, the news is here that Nokia's announced they're adding an extra option to licensing for QT 4.5. It's going to be the LGPL license. And essentially what you need to know about it is it means it's more permissive. And that means that commercial developers can use the QT application framework and UI for zero cost in proprietary closed-source applications. And previously, that was only available through quite expensive commercial licenses. So the chances are this is going to greatly enhance the uptake and adoption and use of QT, which obviously Nokia is very keen to do because if that helps them as well. They're opening it up to get more community involvement in terms of opening up the source repository so people can see what's going on right up to date. And it's basically... QT is a core strategic asset of Nokia, and by doing this, they're making it even more open source friendly. You know, and if you combine this with the Symbian OS, it makes Nokia a very, very serious player in open source. It really is at the core of their business strategy now.
Okay, thanks, Rafe. That was impressive. That was under a minute. Moving on, another subject, which hopefully will take a bit longer because it's, I suspect, more interesting to a wider group of people, i.e. everybody. Music and music on phones, music on handheld devices. At Macworld a couple of weeks ago, Apple made a significant announcement about iTunes. Ewan, do you want to introduce this and then we'll chat about why it's significant?
Apple have opened up the iTunes store now, and now the four major labels are happy to provide the music as MP3 files, as opposed to Apple's Fairplay DRM'd AAC files. Previously, it was only EMI. That takes the store uptake from 20% to about 80%, which is available. But what's interesting is, first of all, you have to pay 30 cents per track if you want to upgrade your previous DRM tracks up to DRM-free, so it's a very nice stealth tax. But music in general, and specifically digital music on portable devices, is always a bugbear because the 20th century model of music industry and publishing meant that there were huge amount of profits. The 21st century model is changing quite a lot. I mean, there was a report today that's come out from the Federation of the Phonographic Industry that 95% of music downloaded online is, quote, illegal. And music market revenue shares shrank by 7% last year, which when you compare that to the sort of shrinkages you're seeing on the high street, is actually in line with the recession that's coming on. IFPSC, here we are. They're estimating, I don't know how, 40 billion music files were illegally shared in 2008. Now, Apple have sold many, many fewer tracks than that, but you know, music is such a differentiator, and it has perceived value for some, but the generation coming up doesn't have perceived value. So we're in this interesting middle ground where people want to charge for music, and people want music for free, and you need those innovative business models coming up. Apple kind of opened the way with the iTunes to have a foot in the door on the online market, admittedly with an old per-track model and you buy the track. Nokia, of course, have their comes with music strategy where you buy a handset and you have access to music for 12 months. You can download as much as you like. It's already included in the fee. But reading the smoke signals, that was released in the UK just before Christmas on one of the Series 40 handsets, so it's a specifically branded 5310. And it's not done incredibly well. The official Nokia quote, I'm just looking down the bit of paper now. I can't, what was the, it wasn't brilliant, but it's doing better. I can't find the exact quote for you. But we're seeing reports from the Carphone Warehouse Word on Moco News that sales of the 5310 in music have been, quote, dreadful. Ah, here we are. Nokia's sales report said that sales of the 5310 were okay, but not earth-shattering.
I think the reason that the Comes With Music hasn't been doing brilliantly is possibly the fact that everything you get from Comes With Music is still DRM'd. And it seems great. You get for a year, you get all this music on your one device, your one phone for free. But behind all that, there's this huge 95% that Ewan's been talking about, where most people these days in the real world, through one channel or another, through torrenting and peer-to-peer sites and other back channels, they somehow think they want to get the music for free. Now, that's obviously not sustainable, because the artists need to make a living, and that's a whole other topic. The thing is, I've just found Ewan's blog post now, which he points us out, right, DRM basically doesn't work. I'll just quote from this. I think Ewan was quoting someone else as well, but it's worth passing on. This is just my rant. You know, people know I hate DRM, but DRM does not work. Regular users are inconvenienced when they cannot move media files to other devices. Anyone with a copy of Google can just do a search and download a DRM-free copy of your media. So why inconvenience the regular users who actually have paid for it? DRM makes your media look less attractive to people, which is what I say about Comes With Music, and that's one reason why it hasn't done so well. Next bullet point, DRM is not more convenient. When did adding restrictions make a better media file type? DRM will be broken in a matter of hours or days, especially if you're a massive multinational, multi-company conglomerate. That's all off Ewan's blog entry. My favourite quote, though, was from Cory Doctorow, I hope I've pronounced that right, who says, the biggest problem in the 21st century will not be piracy, but obscurity. Artists and companies shouldn't worry that there is this, quote, piracy, that there is file copying going on. If people are using computers to copy ones and noughts, they should be happy that they're fans, that there's an audience out there, and then sell them on all the other stuff, the concerts, the posters, the DVDs. DRM needs to be out of the way so that people can simply buy music at a reasonable price, and it'll be cheap enough that they don't need to go around looking around BitTorrent sites and the darker corners of the internet. I was just talking to my wife earlier about this in terms of books and music and DVDs and all these different sorts of media. If, for example, Leona Lewis's album in the shops on CD is to play £12, to sell that for £13 online, buying it track by track, is just ridiculous when you get no product at the end of the day. And I guess it might be in £14 or £15 without the DRM, when if it was sold online with no DRM, DRM free, for say £4 or £5, I think genuinely people would actually buy it, that knowing that there are no restrictions, they can use it on any of their devices and accept the cost saving. That it's a way of actually making it attractive to people's pockets.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that in two parts. The second part is going to be DRM in general in the music industry. The first part is what is Comes With Music. I do not believe that the DRM restrictions are what stopped Comes With Music selling well at Christmas. I believe it was a threefold thing. The first one was the 5310 is a little bit of a rubbish phone. It doesn't look nice. It doesn't look fashionable. It's a lower spec phone. It's Series 40. Your power users who could use this are not going to touch that with a barge pole. The second one was it wasn't advertised well. Yes, it had lots of advertising in the Carphone Warehouse, but these stripes of things going, with music, percent your music free. I mean, I saw a taxi driving around with a Come With Music advert, and not once did it say download as much music as you'd like. I mean, the basic unique selling point was not put over to the customer, the consumer, or in any of the advertising. And again, the cost. People were looking at this, and what was coming out of the Carphone Warehouse was people going, well, can I have that on another phone? So the service was when it was explained, was attractive, but it just was not bundled correctly. It was not advertised correctly. This was a good product with a bad pitch. I don't think that the DRM made a material difference.
Yes, Ewan, I mean, I agree with you there in that the problem with comes with music isn't related to DRM. And I actually think for a service like that, people probably would accept DRM, given that the costs involved aren't that big. And we're talking sort of about £40 or so to add comes with music subscription to a phone. You've already talked about the advertising. I actually think the problem is just explaining the proposition is quite difficult, because it is something so unique, and you do kind of get the it's too good to be true thing. And I actually think introducing on the 5310, while was laudable in the sense it would reach a bigger market, actually was a problem, because the typical user there isn't accustomed to services and music on the phone. And so for a typical 5310 buyer, there's an extra hurdle to get over to explain. It's just not just you've got to explain the music offering, it's a service as well and all that download stuff. Nokia do need to persevere with this and get it onto other devices, you know, both the high-end ones, you know, something like the 5800. If you were selling that in the shops, you know, for £290, say, with unlimited music, that's a very attractive offer, even more so if you can get it onto the networks, which is, of course, another problem in the UK market. If you're not selling on the networks, you're always going to have difficulty. And that was the problem with comes with music. Operators are reluctant to take it up because they see it as cannibalizing their own services and own revenue. And maybe there needs to be some, you know, revenue share there. I don't know. But I suspect operators will, you know, come around in time, as they do to all things. I think the other thing that we were talking about more generally was DRM. I do agree that now that the iTunes store has gone DRM free, and it's far from the first, you know, we think of things like Seven Digital Music or the Amazon Music Store, which have been DRM free for a while now. Nokia clearly needs to match that in the Nokia Music Store, at least for, you know, purchase downloads. Comes with music, yes, it would be nice, but I think, you know, you have to probably be realistic there, at least for the next few years. And, you know, people talk a lot about these things, and the truth is the licensing, etc., with music is very complicated, and there are business reasons. I mean, I'm sure Nokia would love to provide everything DRM free, but they're not able to do that because of the agreements they have with the labels. And actually, I think the labels probably need to wake up and work with a partner like Nokia, who's potentially going to be able to provide them with a revenue stream that's much more sustainable into the future. Maybe Nokia needs to do a better job of negotiating there. So yes, I'd like to see DRM free, but I do agree with also what was said earlier. DRM gets in the way in terms of when it inconveniences a user. And I say that's not actually a problem with DRM. It's a problem with the implementation of DRM. And I think as long as you can design DRM in such a way that it doesn't ever inconvenience the user, then okay, people will accept it. Now, there is a theoretical question whether that's possible. Is it just easier to go DRM free because there's less costs involved in managing and maintaining it? In the world in which we live, it is still commercial enterprises, and there is a problem with piracy. And, you know, this goes back to the music industry discussion that Ewan was talking about.
Indeed, and I think for the music industry to accept DRM-free music and this almost ubiquitous music and the idea of a global jukebox that you can access any tune from any device, it's going to be a generational thing. I think it will lead the people who are listening and downloading music now to become the directors and the executives in the music industry over the next 15 or 20 years. They are the ones that know that it's concerts, that it's t-shirts, that it's posters that will make the money, where the actual tangible goods are. The single and the music will become the promotional vehicle, and that is unfortunately going to take time. There will be some record labels, the smaller ones, that will be able to move much faster. There'll be companies like Apple that can, through enthusiasm and charisma, will actually drive through those changes. But I think when we look at the big four labels, when we look at the independent labels, it will take people using the system now to be in charge before we actually see a real change. And unfortunately, that means Steve and I are going to have to continue BitTorrenting Hawkwind.
Let's move on to another topic now. I think DRM is always going to be controversial, so we'll maybe pick up that in a few months if things change on Nokia's side with their music store. And we can also then check up on how comes with music is doing. One final topic I wanted to close off this insight with is talking about the perfect mobile phone user interface. Now, everyone listening to this will have used UIQ phones, will have used S60 phones. We know how they work. So, for example, in S60, you've got a standby screen, a home screen with some shortcuts on. That's one way of launching applications. You've then got an S60 menu button, which you can press, and that brings up a whole set of folders and applications, which again you can use to launch more applications. Some phones like the E71, E63 have got hardware shortcut buttons. The E90 has got a whole row of hardware shortcut buttons. Again, you can use those for switching to or launching applications. And on top of that, you've got third-party utilities. There are a whole range of replacements for this S60 standby screen, things like the Handy Shelf from Epochware, and I think there's one called JBackman or something similar. There's also things like Sky Kiki and T9 Nav, which are give you sort of predictive as-you-type matching to your contacts and, again, and to your applications. So my question here and my thought is that on any given device like this, you've got three, four, maybe even five different ways of accessing exactly the same applications and data. Isn't that horrifically inelegant? And is there a better way to go? Now, before you guys leap in, I mean, the Apple iPhone is widely touted as having a pretty perfect interface. And when it was launched, it did, in the sense that everything it could do was immediately transparent and you can see what you're doing. And there's nothing to complicate you. Since then, we've had third-party applications have been let loose, and most iPhone owners have now got up to 10 screens with up to over 140 different applications, all of which have to be scrolled through page after page to get to the one you want. And they're having exactly the same problem as that other manufacturers have had in times past. How do you give the man in the street, how do you give anybody easy and quick access to applications and data without making them go through three or four different interfaces in the same device or having to press button press after button press after button press or scroll screen after screen after screen with a finger? Rafe, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I think the first and most obvious thing to say is there is no perfect UI and it depends on, you know, the market, the person, the device or whatever. And I actually think what's critical here is making sure that your platform, with all the inherent advantage you have of creating a platform, is flexible enough to support multiple ways of doing things. Now, whether you choose to disclose all of those to the users is another point. I mean, you talked about the iPhone, and actually I think that, you know, for all of its wonderfulness, and there's no doubt, you know, simplifying everything down did work, but a function of that was the feature set was seriously pared back, and that makes it unattractive to some people. And actually, it's an easier job to design a simple UI than it is to design a hard UI, a more complex one with loads of functions. And I actually think you said it there, that essentially the iPhone has a lack of flexibility in expanding. And I think you can actually, you know, accuse the same thing of things like S60 and Windows Mobile. I actually think they're less of a problem. And, you know, by the same token, you can take this in how do you access functions within an application, and do you do it by a menu or on-screen buttons or things like that. And actually, in order to have a large amount of functionality, generally menus seem to be the only way to go in mobile at the moment. Is there another way to do that? So I think, you know, going back to your original question, I think one of the things that I'd like to see explored in the future is a phone, and this could be enabled by the existing platforms relatively easily, that basically starts with just one application on its sort of home screen or whatever, which is a sort of setup, and you can then choose which applications you want to appear. And so you might just start with, say, contacts and messaging, but then you realize you know want to be able to browse the web, so you add a web browser. Now, whether those applications are already on the phone or hidden or downloaded over the air, but you sort of create a custom device, if you like, on software by adding in the bits of functionality you need it when you need it, and maybe there's some way to hide them when you don't need them again, or just add an application for a week. So, you know, for example, you're going to Barcelona and you want to add a city guide, and you say just add this for a week. And, you know, there's been some interesting Nokia concept devices around this when they've done exactly that sort of thing. And by the same token, they've done a device that is basically just a long scrolling list and with functions that are added as you go. And it is an issue that is, I think, going to become more and more prevalent as the devices become more and more capable. Because the truth is, of course, that you only ever do a certain amount of functionality on a device. Just like a computer, you only use a tiny amount of its potential or the number of applications. And we're approaching that thing on mobile as well. So some way of having the UI that is self-disclosing, I think, in my book, is probably the way to go. But, you know, I'm not an expert on this. And I think it's going to be a very, very hotly debated topic in the next few years.
I think it's fair to say that there is no right answer. And what would work for myself, Steve, or Rafe would be different to what would work for our parents or even our grandparents and even our children. It's probably worth remembering that the UI didn't always mean graphics and eye candy. It's user interface. It's how you talk with the device. So it will cover things like the accelerometers. It could cover things like buttons underneath the screen as a corded keyboard, for example. In terms of what is the best user interface for me, I think it's the Bash shell, the old Unix terminal box, and you can do pretty much everything in there. So if I could have the N97 with a command line...
What, so it said dial number and send SMS?
Well, no, it would be ATD, then the number, Rafe. Come on, let's remember the old days.
Use command set. Oh, dear, that's going...
Yeah, but it would work. And if anybody stole my phone, I'd get it back within a couple of days because they're just like, I have no idea what this is.
Security feature.
Yeah, well, security through obscurity does not work.
Somehow I think you may be barking up the wrong tree there. But hey, I mean, actually, I think you make a point that pairing things back to be very simple is often the way to go. And I know talking to, friends of mine, they sort of go, I've got this phone, but it's so complex, I don't know how to use it. You know, I've got this map application on it, but I don't want to use maps. And I say, but, you know, you could use it to find your way around. I said, well, can't it show it to me when I want to find myself around somewhere? And actually, that's a good point. You know, can phones become more intelligent and sort of reveal their functionality when it thinks you need it? So, you know, when you're going to a meeting, you've got a location entered, for example, and you're not at that location, perhaps it should pop up, you know, saying, do you want to navigate me there? But of course, that would annoy some people intensely. So I think it goes back to this original question, is how do you design a platform, or what can you do in a platform to sort of enable that sort of thing? And I think the answer is to make it as flexible as possible. I think, you know, you get an answer, sort of hint of that with S60, in the thinking that, you know, it's non-touch devices, it's touch devices, QWERTY devices, and actually S60 at the moment is probably the most flexible in the number of different type of devices out there. You know, and we're seeing an awful lot of attention now around the kind of the media tablet, or what I like to think of as the successors to the PDAs, the touchscreen devices with large screens. But personally, I only think they're going to be a small part of the market. And so having a platform that can extend beyond that, I think, is very important, because we've talked about platform advantage and they aren't going to go anywhere, especially because services and software is going to be more important, and, you know, scales of economy and all that kind of thing. But creating that platform with enough flexibility in is an incredibly difficult engineering problem, and I don't think there are any easy answers.
Yeah, it's very noticeable and notable on the E63, for example, and I think probably for the E71, that Nokia and their recent E-series devices have made the home button, the one with the little picture of the home, not exactly the same as the old S60 apps key. With most S60 phones, you press the S60 apps key and up comes the folders of applications instantly. And if you press it again after that, you then get back to the home screen. With the home button on the E-series devices, you press the home, you really do get the standby screen. And with the E63's case, there's my E63 chiming in the background, the standby screen icons are custom designed. There's two standby screens, personal and business, but they're custom designed that most users won't actually, if you think about it, actually need to get to the S60 application screens very often. So in a sense, they have simplified it by taking out a whole layer of the interface. Rafe and I were brainstorming the different applications people might need in personal and business modes. And it's an example of how much certain functionality has been buried. For example, E63 doesn't have a GPS. Nokia obviously didn't see users using maps very much, this Nokia Maps. Nokia Maps is not only buried in the tools folder, it's buried at the end of the tools folder, which I think speaks volumes. And there are several other application examples of this around the applications folder system on the E63. And E71. So that's an example of Nokia simplifying things. Also, on the E63 and E71, there's this matches you type for contacts. You just start tapping away the contact's name on the standby screen, and up it comes. So for many people, I think the combination of these systems plus the hardware shortcut keys to calendar, address book, and email, you've really got everything you need all from the standby screen, and you've ripped out probably which was the main way of accessing your applications for generations previous of S60 devices. Rafe?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great example of the flexibility I was talking about with S60. And it's true of other systems as well, of course. But that ability to sort of customize the idle screen, which is something that Windows Mobile actually has been very good at for many years. And you see that in a lot of Windows Mobile devices. You never actually need to go into the launch, or not typically. And we're talking sort of in very general terms here. And I think it's great to see that sort of thing on the E series. And actually, I think it's where sort of some of the less flexible platforms, you know, do fall down. And obviously, we're talking about feature phones today. I think it's probably a bit unfair to put the iPhone in that category. But the flexibility within the UI is an important issue when you're running on different types of devices. And the sort of the S60 experience on touch is very different to non-touch. But actually, you can draw out quite a lot of differences between the QWERTY devices and the sort of the T9 powered devices. So that does underline, and I think that's just baby footsteps, really. There's a lot more that can be done in that kind of area. And you sort of think, well, would it be a worthwhile thing to kind of turn off the app launcher altogether for those that don't need it? I think that's maybe a bit too radical, but that's the kind of thinking I think may be needed in the future.
Thanks, Rafe. I think we'll wrap up the show for this week. We'll be back probably on that. Many of these topics will recur over the course of 2009. For now, it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield. We've got goodbye from Rafe Blandford.
Bye, everyone.
And, of course, Ewan Spence is at ewanspence.com/blog. Don't forget the /blog bit, or you get a page of broken images like I did. Yeah. Ewan, do you want to say goodbye and
correct my... Yeah, fix it now. For the time you can fix this podcast.
Okay. So ewanspence.com, and you can find Ewan's thoughts on DRM and many, many other topics. It's a bit like Boing Boing, but smaller. There we go. So goodbye from everyone, and we'll see you next week. Bye.